Revenue Chat episode 106. The Dream Business community wants to help you with your career and business. Are you ready for accelerated success? Check it out. The Dream Business community at tonyduroso.com/community. Get the Revenue Chat mobile app for your Android or iPhone. It's free. Download from your cell phone or smart device at tonyduroso.com/mobile.
This is Revenue Chat Radio with your host, Tony D'Urso, interviewing successful entrepreneurs and giving you actionable advice and insights. Let's rev it up.
Hello again and welcome to this episode of Revenue Chat. I'm your host, Tony D'Urso. In our last episode, 105, Susan Martin gave us the 5 simple steps to business sanity. But do not be fooled. One of her solopreneur clients is making $25 to $30 million these days and now runs a huge company. Listen up and pay heed to a consummate expert in straightening out a business. On this episode, we have Looney Libis, a 25-plus year serial entrepreneur, most recently founder of Fledge, the Conscious Company Accelerator, and co-founder of InvestorFlow.org, an online service connecting impact investors along with the Entrepreneur in Residence at Presidio Graduate School. Looney is the author of the Next Step series of guidebooks on entrepreneurship and the Pinchot Impact Index, outlining a technique for measuring impact across a portfolio of companies. His website is fledge.co. That's fledge.co. All right, Revenue Crew, let's rev it up. Get ready for Looney to tell us why California capitalism isn't the answer and to invest in revenues instead of exits. Here we go. Hello, Looney. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, I've checked you out quite a bit, and I'm very grateful to have you on the show. And I really want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to hang out with us on Revenue Chat.
Yeah, great to be here.
Oh, excellent. And you know, I mentioned a little bit about you, and perhaps you'd like to fill us in, Looney, how you became an expert in your field.
So it depends on how you define the field. I'm going to define it as someone who is helping other startups get going, especially those that are doing good in the world. So that's my current field. And I got into that because at age 22, fresh out of college, I couldn't work for anybody. I found that I was at Spirit, and by background an entrepreneur. I did do a stint at a large company for a few months, and 3 months in knew I was on the wrong track. So wrote my first business plan, got in a car, moved out to Seattle before Seattle was Seattle, and started my first company. Did that one for a few years. That one failed. Did the next one. That one was going public at the height of the dot-com bubble. I used to be a techie. Then joined a company, helped grow it from 20 to like 400 people. Started 2 more. And at age 40, with 20 years experience and a whole lot of success and learning in the startup tech world, decided to go off and do something different. I took a moment in time and I decided to look back and see what I really enjoyed doing. And my favorite part in my whole career was the moments in time between having an idea and earning the first dollar in revenue, right? Which is the most chaotic part of the startup experience. And so I said, how do I make a career out of that? How do I get paid to go and do that over and over and over again without getting my co-founders upset? Because 4 years later, they would generally get upset when I left, let alone a year or two. And I found that there's a path for that now. It's called a business accelerator. and it's a business helping other businesses get started. And I run one of these called Fledge, and we focus on socially and environmentally conscious companies from around the world. So that's how I got to be an expert by doing it and then sharing my expertise with others.
Very cool, Looney. You know, I've been through your site. I've been through some of the videos on your program on Fledge. And I just got to tell you, it's nothing short of amazing. I am very impressed at what you do. And it just boggles me that all the business you get and all the startups that you help and how big this has grown. And I've got a couple questions about it. First, I'd like to know, what's wrong with investing in startups?
Well, it is Revenue Chat, right? So the key piece, there's a lot of flaws in the traditional way we've been investing in startups. And this is like kind of a 60-year-old industry. It's amazing. I meet people all the time who are angels and who do startups, and they think this has been going on forever, but it hasn't. Startups as we know it today and venture capital as we know it today really started in the early 80s, late 70s. So in my lifetime, in your lifetime. The big flaw is that whole industry, the whole mindset, everything that's been written about startups, the movies, right, the startup movie and the Jobs movie and all the other stories, they're all wrapped around this myth that there's this lone guy, it's always a guy, right? There's this lone guy who has an invention that, you know, next thing you know, a bunch of rich people come along and give him some money to make it big. It instantly gets big. It's an overnight success with no big struggles except for Act One. And then he's a billionaire, right? And we can point to a bunch of billionaires who kind of lived this story, right? Gates, the richest man in the world, and Zuckerberg. And right now I'm in Seattle, so I'm still in Seattle, so that'd be like Bezos, right? And they are billionaires. They own more money than most countries in the world. But that's actually not how it ever happens. There's always more struggle to it. There's always more ups and downs and whatnot. But the investors, the key flaw here is that the investors love that story and want to be part of it. They want to turn their dollar into $10,000. They actually want to turn their $100,000 into $10 million. And that rarely happens. So in this country alone, we know this from the Small Business Association and the Kauffman Institute, the Kauffman Foundation. There are over 500,000 companies that get started each year in the United States, right? All sorts of companies, but companies in general. And only 0.2% of those companies get venture capital. A few thousand get some angel funding. But all those companies that are out looking for venture capital and angel funding, they're all telling the story that they are that lone inventor that's going to hit it big, that they're the mythical unicorn that all the investors are searching for. And they're not, right? A few a year are, but the other thousands of them are not. But the investment structure is all structured around unicorns. And so when you have a company, you give them $100,000 and they don't grow like gangbusters and they're not the next Facebook, then nobody's happy. Then the founders aren't happy because they're stuck, you know, with a company that doesn't have any air quote value. It's hard to do air quotes on the radio. The investors are unhappy because they have a zombie at best or a company that needs more money at worst or dead company at worst. And strangely enough, that whole flaw there of these companies that are dying and running out of money, it's mostly around the structure that the investors are using. Their business model is driving how investments happen, and their business model is all about finding these mythical unicorns. And there's another way to invest, and almost nobody knows about it.
That's quite something. You know, I'm working on something called a vision map. It's a chapter I'm writing for my next book called Elite Entrepreneurs. And along with your figures as well, I'm finding it startling how many businesses fail, what percentage of startups that just don't make it. It's staggering. For example, you know, Bloomberg reports 8 out of 10 businesses fail, completely fail in the first 18 months. I mean, it's just, it used to think, yeah, you know, give me a couple million dollars and I'll make a big success out of it. But you're so right. It just doesn't happen. And as you were alluding to, there's an alternative here. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think the Bloomberg number might be a little bit higher. The Kauffman SBA number says half of all those 500,000 companies are gone in 3 years. Right? They don't know. Maybe it is 18 months, but my experience is that the things that look like startups generally last more than 18 months. They usually find a way to hold out for like 2 years, and then they give up, or they get one round of funding and then they last for 3 years and then they run out of money. So I don't think it's quite that bad. But there's a story I tell about what success looks like to venture capitalists and big angels. And success to them is 3 out of 10 succeed, 3 out of 10 return capital to them. So oddly enough, success in venture capital means a batting 300, right? And just be clear, batting 300 means getting it wrong 7 out of 10 times, right? Batting 300 is a 30% success rate and a 70% failure rate. So I won't name the names, but the big name VCs, when they're doing well, they may get 4 out of 10 right instead of 3 out of 10 right. And that's all they need to do to be the big name VCs.
That's interesting, Looney. It's you're a superstar in baseball if you bat 300, and it seems like you're also a superstar for venture capital.
It is. So from the investor point of view, that's fine. You could be Ted Williams, but if you're the startup, that means more often than not, you're one of the losses. You're one of the guys who never made it to the majors.
Right. But now, drum roll please, with the help of Fledge and your company, you've changed the dynamics and the paradigm of that completely.
Yeah, so I'm make a total claim up front. I did not invent this. The way this came across is that I found this organization in Seattle called Lighter Capital. That name I will name. They do growth stage capital using a structure that I hadn't seen before. It's called a revenue-based loan. Everybody knows how a loan works, I presume, real quick, right? Usually bank gives money to company. Company gives bank back that and some interest. Revenue-based loan's a little different. In this case, organization gives company money, and company pays back that organization 4, 5, 6, 7% of top-line revenue until they've paid back twice the capital. It's not in 1 year, so it's not a 200% loan. It's across a few years, and it winds up being 15, 18, 20%. Cost of capital. And they do a lot of these loans and they're succeeding at that. And it's really useful. And that itself is a great innovation, but it doesn't help startups because they only do growth stage. So my question that I had 5 years ago was, could we use this model to invest in any startup as seed capital? I looked around to try and find examples of organizations and funds using this model, and I couldn't because there weren't any. So I went around to the experts and I talked to the founders at Lighter and I talked to the researcher at Harvard, discovered that the famous Clayton Christensen from The Innovator's Dilemma was doing some research in this field. Talked to his associate, talked to a bunch of people who were trying it out, and everybody said it should work. Nobody was doing it, but they said it should work. So we tried it out. We do a slight twist to this model. So we don't do loans. We are an equity investor. So Fledge, which is the name of my accelerator, we buy shares in startups, and then they promise to buy back our shares using 4% of their future revenues. So they get their company back, we double our money, or better, and everybody's happy. So that's really the secret sauce here. It's not a secret because I talk about it, and it works, right? So just one more time. We buy shares in a company, and they buy them back using future revenues. That's it. Yeah, that's 80% of the idea and 90% of the details.
That's very cool. 4% is very doable. Very doable. You're not killing the company while they're growing. That's very cool. And I've seen some of the success stories, and I've seen how many people are doing this and how well it's going. And I want to ask you about some successes, but you're not giving away all the upside on this?
All right, so I got that feedback. There's a prolific angel investor in town. When I was putting together the business model for Fledge, I was doing it inside the offices. You want a small world story and weird quinces. So I was officing at Voyager Capital, which is one of the VC firms here in Seattle. They gave me an office to hang out, and they had funded some of my tech companies. So I'm writing a business plan for socially conscious accelerator, not investing in this in the old style, what I call California capitalism model, but doing it in a VC office. And they have this prolific angel who hangs out there, who has an office there too. And I bounced this off of him. And he said, yeah, but what happens when there's a 10X and you're leaving all the money on the table? And so I said, all right, well, what if they buy back half our shares? And he said, okay, that works. And so they actually buy back half our shares. And I will admit that our entire model around that and justification for why they buy back half instead of 2/3 or 3/4 or 1/3 or whatnot is that 10-second conversation with an angel investor.
I got you. And can I ask, in terms of percentages or statistics, I understand that you have a two-month intensive training workshop that takes that startup from A to Z. Perhaps you'd like to cover some of those topics or activities of what you actually do to train. To make that startup actually successful is what you guys invest in. It's not just money. You invest all your experience, your blood, your sweat, your tears, your labor into doing that.
Yeah, it's not just me, actually. It's me and 420 mentors, volunteers.
Wow, that's substantial.
It just keeps growing. So we're using a style of business accelerator that was invented 10 years ago in Boulder called Techstars. We are not a Techstars accelerator. We just copied them. The style is rather, it sounds really simple. Anyone who wants can apply anywhere from the world. We've seen applicants from now 91 countries. We pick seven at a time. Seven's a nice, reasonable number of companies in one place at one time. They all come to Seattle for 2 months, or Lima, Peru is another location where we expanded to. More to come. So they all come to one place at one time for 2 months in a co-working facility, working side by side. While they're there, we do a few different things with them. One, we have an MBA class in entrepreneurship that they get as part of the program. I teach entrepreneurship at Presidio Graduate School, and so I happen to have one of these lying around. So they get that education to fill in any gaps they have. Two, they get flooded by mentors. So they don't just get one or two coaches. They don't just get a few introductions. They meet somewhere between 10 and 20 experienced business people one-on-one. And then they meet a whole bunch more at our kind of cocktail party gatherings and big graduation event at the end. So in the end, they'll meet, 30 or 40 experienced business people, fellow founders, investors, accountants, marketers, so forth. So then they can get exactly the help they need for their company. And then the third major thing we do is we spend 3 weeks out of those 2 months on storytelling. So not pitching, not investor relations, not how to raise money, how to tell a great story. And that's something that most of these programs don't do. Most of them worry about investor pitches. But as you said, as you saw the companies we have, they're incredibly inspirational companies. They are solving poverty in a for-profit model, and they're working on the environment in a for-profit model, and they're working on global health, and they're saving people's lives. And so they have stories to tell. But what we found over the years, we found rather quickly in the first year, most people don't know how to tell a great story. The anecdote that I use when I kick off that part of the program is that you've all grown up listening to stories and watching stories, that there's an entire industry, right? We call it Hollywood. They make TV shows for us. They make movies for us. They are professional storytellers. And yet most of what they put out is terrible. They only have a few good hits. So nonetheless, I am challenging each one of these entrepreneurs to not only make a great company, but also within 3 weeks to put together an amazing story and tell it on stage. And a lot of them have never stood in front of 50 people before, let alone 200 people before, to tell their story. So it's a very intense time in the program, and we have always gotten people through it and had them tell at least a reasonably good story on stage. And in at least a dozen instances, we've had them tell an amazing story on stage. And it's a very useful skill as an entrepreneur, because you wind up, like I'm doing right now, telling the story of your company.
I love it, Looney. Very cool stuff. What kind of stats do you have on your graduates, please?
Stats. All right. So there are 63 graduates of Fledge, hailing from 20 different countries. I don't have the total breakdown, but we just did our last cohort in Lima, Peru, which added 8 more in Latin America. So we have 9 in Latin America, cover about 8 or 9 countries in Africa, 1 from China, 1 from Philippines, a few Canadians, a bunch of Americans. Our one lone European company, although it's an odd version of Europe because it's the Republic of Georgia. I looked it up because I was wondering where that was in the world, and technically that's Europe. So they're kind of scattered all over the place. They are, to date, 5 years old now. They have improved the lives of a few million people, and they've done this through clean-burning cook stoves in Africa, through medical devices sold in India and Africa, U.S., and Asia. They're employing hundreds of people, mostly indigenous people in their home, not just in their home country, but usually in their home village. So we're bringing incomes up from $1 a day to more than $1 a day. They are making cotton recyclable. So, you know, we recycle paper and plastic and metals and glass, but we throw away all our clothing. Well, later this year and next year, that won't be true anymore. We'll start recycling all our cotton. They make plastics recyclable. There's a company based in Argentina that can take any plastic waste and turn it into a useful product, which is an artificial stone for use in and under concrete. They're funding smallholder farmers in the Philippines using crowdfunding. They're making mezcal in Oaxaca in Mexico.
Pardon me, what's mezcal?
Mezcal is to tequila what scotch is to vodka.
Oh, okay.
Right, so super high-end, smoky, spirit, made from the same material as tequila. It's still agave, but it doesn't taste anything like agave. It tastes like it's in the realm of scotch. Comes from Oaxaca, Mexico. It's been made there for probably 1,000 years. It's not exported very far. It's not a very common product yet. So there's a company that has a third generation production producer of mezcal, and they're exporting that. A great example of taking a native strength, in this case a great product, and using globalization to bring the profits back to that region. Happens to be the second poorest state in Mexico.
Wow. The Dream Business community wants to help you with your career and business. As you know, jobs can be fickle. Here today, gone tomorrow. And owning a business has its own frailties. Bloomberg says 8 out of 10 entrepreneurs fail in the first 18 months. A Harvard study says 3 out of every 4 venture-backed firms fail. And there's other sources with shocking figures of their own, which all point to one very conclusive point. These are scary times we live in. Let's help you in the Dream Business community. Yes, you. Let's try to give you the information you need now to boost your career or business. And I'll be there every step of the way, helping you along with other experts in many industries. Are you ready for accelerated success? Check it out, the Dream Business community at tonydurso.com/community. That's tonydurso.com/community. Do you like the awesome interviews on Revenue Chat? Please help others discover these interviews on iTunes by giving a kind review if you like them. Go to tonydurso.com/iTunes and give a few sentences about what you liked. Let me know and I'll send you something to show my appreciation. That's tonydurso.com/iTunes. And thanks so much. And we're back with Looney Libous talking about why California capitalism isn't the answer and to invest in revenues instead of exits. Amazing stuff. It seems like a lot of your projects, Looney, not necessarily all, but a lot seem to have green and world health and poverty areas, a lot of impact on that. Is there some focus of what you look for in a startup? Is there a slant in what you pick, or you like a certain type of, you know, model? Can you tell us more about what's a good fit for Fledge?
Yeah, if we went through all 63, you would see we kind of cover everything. The only big impact area we haven't covered yet is education. And it's just that we haven't found the applicants we like in that space yet. But we have a whole bunch of companies doing food and agriculture, whether it's aggregating and distributing and processing or just making life better for smallholder farmers. That's an obvious one to do, given there's hundreds of millions of smallholder farmers in the world. There's like a billion people in the world who still make a living digging in soil. We love to do anything we can to clean the environment in a for-profit model. So whether that's clean energy, we have a company here in Seattle that found a way to get organizations to use less energy in a method. It's hard to describe, but in a method, it looks like a bank product. It looks like, basically, it looks like you sign up to a 401k and the next thing you know, you're using less energy.
Cool.
You know, anytime we find anything useful in global health that we think can scale, we like that too. It's kind of the criteria winds up being a great team, because we're investors. We need a great team to execute. How big an impact can they have? Can this company grow enough to be national scale, if not international scale, And if they are national scale, are they really making a noticeable difference in their country? And then third, the odds of their success, because if they don't succeed, then they don't get to have that impact.
I love it, Looney. Very cool stuff. Thanks for sharing all that with us. Now, I'd like to know a little bit more about you. I'd like to know about purpose and vision. What motivates and drives you, Looney?
So I had one of those, we'll call it, not midlife crisis at all, but midlife shifts. So I was on the normal track of being a tech entrepreneur. I had done 5 tech startups and thought everything that the media was covering was correct, right? I'm supposed to get rich. In fact, I'm supposed to follow Andrew Carnegie, right, and get rich and then give away my money. And I woke up one morning, well before that, I guess the shift started earlier than the career shift. I woke up one morning, I was about 17 years into that career, and I looked back and I had done only 4 startups by then, but 3 were still running. And so I looked at that, which is considered an excellent track record, right? Because as we said, right, the 7 out of 10 are supposed to fail. And I said, I must know something. I don't know what I know because I've never taken a class in entrepreneurship. I've never actually taken a business class since high school. So I figured I must know something about this startup thing. I should help others. And so this is before I even started the 5th software company. And I looked around and I tried to find some place to do that. And there really weren't any good places to do that yet. I found a few organizations, nonprofits that help startups, but it wasn't what I was looking for. And then I went through the totally not uncommon entrepreneurship divorce, then found my new wife, and then got back on track to find someplace to give back. And I wound up discovering this business school that's based on my hometown. I live on Bainbridge Island outside of Washington. And there was a school that at the time was called Bainbridge Graduate Institute. It was about 8 years old. It was the first school in the world to teach what they called sustainable business, what we would now call impactful business, or how to do good and do business at the same time. It's now called Presidio Graduate School. It's merged in with the second ever school to teach this. And I asked them if I could be of service to them. And they said, sure, sit in the back of the entrepreneurship class and speak up whenever you think you have something to say. So I did that for about 6 months. And sitting in that class, every one of those people in that class wanted to do something good for the world. And from that, I learned that it was possible to both do business and make the world better at the same time. That you didn't have to follow Carnegie and give away your money at the end of life. You could actually do good while you were making money. And I just really hadn't seen that before. So when my last software company left town on me, we merged it and it moved back east. I said, I'm not moving with it. I'm going to go do something new and I got to make it impactful. So that's where that career shift happened. That was the trigger. And it's there's no better job for me. And in terms of like getting up in the morning, I always want to get up in the morning. I always want to do more because there's more problems to solve. We got 1 billion people in poverty, well, 2 billion people in poverty that we need to pull out, and an environment to fix, and some health issues, and lots of problems in the world.
That's very cool, Looney. I am with you on that. Totally in sync. Awesome purpose. Great drive. I love it. Very cool stuff. And I like that especially, excuse me, don't wait till the end of your life when you're, you know, whatever age, start giving now, start giving back now as you can. I really like that a lot.
Yeah, and we're seeing this, the millennial generation, they already seem to have figured this part out. I don't know where they learned it from. Maybe it was just eating Ben and Jerry's, but they seem to learn it. And they're, you know, I see a lot of young people who want to follow this path. Their flaw at the moment, and I was just talking to one of them 2 hours ago. They haven't lived enough to know what the problems are. You know, some of them have been overseas now and have not done the Peace Corps because either they're too young or the Peace Corps is not exactly what the Peace Corps was. But they've just gone off to some corner of the world where there is a much bigger divide of wealth and poor and seen the poor and want to do something about it and didn't fall into the nonprofit path or fell in and really quickly discovered that nonprofits don't have enough money to do what they need to do. And that there'll never be enough money in the nonprofit path to do all this work.
So true. Very good. Give as you can, give while you can. And it's just so rewarding. I've been doing that for a while, and it's just such a good feeling to help people as much as you can with what you can. There's just nothing like it. Until someone tries it and does it and gets into it, you won't really understand it. But it's a feeling that I just can't describe. You know, you just want to keep doing that. You just want to keep helping people or survive and take care of your own livelihood and so forth, of course. But totally with you on that. Absolutely.
And we sit around and debate, right? I spend a lot of time with impact investors as well, not just entrepreneurs. It's lovely. I get to sit on all sides of the table now. And the impact investors are debating what impact means to them. And they're debating whether or not the ideal thing to do is to invest in the flaws in our local area versus the bigger issues in the global area. We had a conversation of that earlier this week in Seattle. We've also been talking, this is one of the flaws of being an entrepreneur. I launched a new company or a new project 2.5 weeks ago. So last year, after spending 4 years raising money and talking to impact investors, I found this incredible need. Turns out the impact investors, unsurprisingly, not everyone should have noticed this, but impact investors have tastes, right? That in the world of philanthropy, it's totally normal. If I like women and puppies and you like water and climate change. Well, the same thing's true in impact investing. And so the last email I got from an impact investor today said, I only want to invest in women. And 2 emails ago, they said they only want to invest in environment. And 3 emails ago, they said they only want to invest in food and agriculture in developing world. And it keeps going like that. And so the challenge is that if you can get 10 impact investors in a room in one city, which is hard to do still, but if you can get them in one room in one city, that there will be very little overlap between investors in that room, which means if you're trying to raise money in any form, whether it's a fund or a company or whatever, from impact investors, it's hard to get 10 who would potentially invest in whatever you're offering because they have such different tastes. And so first few days in January with a partner, we launched a new service called Investor Flow. Investorflow.org is the website, O-R-G. And it is a, we'll call it a social network for impact investors to connect like-minded investors.
I like that.
We're busy onboarding people who heard about it in December, who reached out and said they wanted to be investors on the platform. And so we're getting on average, more than one request per day right now to get on, which is great because that means we should get to a few hundred this year. And our goal is to get to a few hundred investors this year and then start sharing the ideas that we see in terms of investments, but only share it with the people who like those ideas, right? Who would agree with those themes.
That's very smart. In a way, you're incubating your investors for your incubator.
Not just my accelerator, not just my companies. This is a generic problem in the industry, and I'm now one of these old entrepreneurs, and when I see a giant ecosystem problem, it's time to fix it. In this case, we're doing it as a nonprofit because it's an ecosystem problem. It's not something we need to go make money at. It's a problem we need to solve and solve quickly.
Cool stuff. Again, that also ties in with the purpose and the drive. Very cool, Looney. I like that a lot. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for sharing all that. It's very good stuff. We are close to wrapping up now. Is there anything else you would like our audience to know about, please?
In my full-time job at Fledge, we are adding more cities so that we can help more companies. I'm always looking for partners who are interested in bringing that program to their city. I'm not interested in just burning jet fuel myself trying to run these in different cities. So we're looking for partners who want to help these impactful startups, who want to help fund them. We're always looking for investors to invest in them. We're looking to make this a mainstream idea that they talk about, you know, all the time until we're all sick of it, until this is business instead of, you know, socially conscious business.
Very cool. All right. And the main site, again, that you would like, are you looking for more people to apply in fledge.co, or are you really good there and you'd like people to look at something else?
All right. So I need everything in the industry, everything everyone can offer. So if you are a startup or know one that would love some help, right, an impactful startup, then it's fledge.co. If you're an experienced business person and would like to add yourself to that list of mentors and help these teams, you can find the mentor page on fledge.co as well. If you're an investor in the impact space, new or experienced, and you're looking for interesting things to invest in, a best place to go is investorflow.org.
Okay, I happen to be on the Fledge page now, and for investors, I'm looking, I don't see a link there. If someone wants, or excuse me, for the mentor, if someone wants to help and participate, here it is.
Yeah, it's on the bottom, and you can just click on contact and fill out the form.
Okay, good. And I see the mentorship and the map. Great stuff you have here. Just absolutely amazing. By the way, I think I may have mentioned it, but I don't think that we got into it. But I was just curious if you happen to have a good success story about your startups and what you've done. If you happen to have a short little success story, I'd love to hear it before we wrap this up. If you happen to have something handy.
I got a lot. It's so hard. I'm gonna pick one that the story hasn't finished yet. So more in my life. So I had a student in my class at what's now Presidio Graduate School, who walked in one day and said that she was going to make cotton recyclable, but wouldn't tell us what that meant. But we worked with her in class for 9 months, working on the business plan, and eventually she did tell the people in the class kind of how it worked. It turns out it's a chemical process. They can basically dissolve clothing and then turn it back into fiber. So she did it in class, and then she went off after school and tried to make it a little bit bigger, and then came back about 6 months later and said I could really use some more guidance and some more help and some path to go get some funding. And so she brought this company to Fledge. Within Fledge, we got a new name for it. It had a – I'm not even going to mention the old name. So now it's called Evernu, E-V-R-N-U. And they did find some funding, quite a lot of funding, in fact. And then last May, they announced their first partnership with a company we've heard of called Levi's. So, in fact, Levi's announced the first pair of recycled jeans ever last year. And then later in the year, Target announced that their one of their T-shirts that they sell, one of their special T-shirts, is going to be have Evernu fabric in it. So, you know, it's not in markets yet, but they are on this incredible path, and I was privileged enough to see it way early when it was almost just a glimmer in the eye of the founders.
That's a great success story. Thank you so much for sharing that, Looney. Very cool stuff. You are changing the world over there.
we're just trying not to have to grow cotton anymore.
Exactly.
Just a little thing like that. It's just a, you know, it's like a $1 trillion industry.
Yeah, just very cool. Good. Well, you know, Looney, thank you very, very much. It's really an honor to have you on the show. You're very educated, learned. You're helping so many people. You're doing so much up there. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Sure. Once again, everyone, this is Looney Libas, and his main website is fledge.co. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, and stay tuned to our next show on Revenue Chat. Our next episode is 107 with Cloris Kylie. She says she helps you attract the right clients so that you build a magnificent business that creates impact and thrives in the long term. This marketing MBA is the founder of Lead Generation Academy and Client Attraction Bootcamp. Cloris is going to reveal secrets to creating digital training programs that sell on the next episode of Revenue Chat. All right. Thanks again, everyone. And until next time, remember, you can make life better for yourself and everyone. Choose wisely.